26. Effie was used to government offices that were official in name only. They operated out of someone's ship or the back of a cantina. Instead of laws and regulations, most people obeyed the customs of a region or the whims of some local potentate. The Republic ran things differently. She'd been told that before, but the truth of it didn't fully hit her until she walked into the offices that regulated shipping. Every step she took in her shabby boots echoed off the polished stone floors. The high ceiling was held aloft by columns too thick for her to put her arms around. Every piece of equipment she saw gleamed with cleanliness, as though each had been put in place only the day before. Effie had timed her visit for just after opening, mostly because she couldn't stand to hang around for Scover to return from her breakfast meeting, but partly because she thought most people wouldn't be up that early. Instead, the place was bustling, yet orderly. She found the pristine environment more intimidating than welcoming. The files she'd downloaded onto the datapad in her bag glowed with imagined heat, like they'd burned their way through the canvas. More than once, Effie thought of simply walking back out the way she'd come. But she stayed put long enough for her name to be called. Effie was ushered into a small room with a Twi'lek minor official. Despite the fact that Effie was a 17-year-old girl, the Twi'lek seemed to be taking her seriously. If he'd laughed her off, that would have given her an excuse, but she was sick of excuses.
"You wish to make a report?" the Twi'lek asked.
"Yes." Taking a deep breath, Effie pulled the datapad from her bag and handed it over. She'd thought it would feel better once there was no turning back. It didn't. She plunged ahead anyway.
"I'm reporting the abuse of indentures in the Bind Guild."
At first, Wreath waited for an invitation. None came. Finally, 3 days after Dez's release from the hospital, Wreath decided not to wait any longer. When he pushed the door chimes, at first he received no response. The auto functions had said Dez Rydan was home and awake, but that wasn't the same as accepting guests. He could be tired, still recovering. Wreath was already turning to go when the door unsealed. It slid open to reveal Dez's quarters. Wreath knew these were normally messier than the average Jedi's quarters, by a power of about 10, but even Dez could only make so much mess within his first few hours out of medical care. He sat on a meditation cushion in the center of the room, a casual robe wrapped loosely around him. He'd regained the weight he had lost, and to judge by what Wreath could see, there wouldn't even be any scars.
"You look good,"
he said, smiling as he walked into the room and the door slid shut behind him.
"Lots better than the last time I saw you."
"I can imagine."
Dez ran one hand through his thick black hair.
"I definitely feel better. It would be difficult to feel worse."
"Maybe this wouldn't be helpful to you," Wreath ventured. "But for me, I'm going to have a vigil for Master Jorah. Her body was lost, so we can't have a pyre. Still, I'm going to light a fire and keep watch. Would you want to join me?"
"I can't,"
Dez said. His voice sounded remote. He didn't quite meet Wreath's eyes.
"Tomorrow I'm leaving for one of the contemplation worlds. I'm taking the Barish Vow."
The Barish Vow was an extreme commitment to gaining ultimate communion with the Force. Those who took the vow spent years, sometimes even decades, in deep meditation and in solitude. It was the last path Wreath would ever have foreseen for Dez.
"But why?" Wreath asked. "The Barish Vow, it's taken by Jedi who've made terrible mistakes. You didn't. You haven't broken your connection to the Force."
"No," Dez said. "That was broken by the Drengir. The healers have pieced it back together again, but it's shaky. The cracks are showing. It won't hold, not unless I commit myself with all my strength to renewing it."
"But..."
Wreath's voice cracked.
"Is that the life you really want?" Slowly, Dez nodded.
You have to understand, the Drengir are profoundly connected to the dark side. The days I spent as their prisoner were days that damaged and tested my connection to the Force. I don't know that I passed the test. Without you, I might have become their creature, a mindless servant of darkness. That is, if they hadn't eaten me first.
You passed the test, Wreath insisted. You're still you.
Yes, I am. But there are ways in which that's not a good thing. I've always wanted action, excitement. I've wanted that a little too much. Jedi aren't meant to please themselves. We're meant to serve. Service doesn't mean only doing what you want to do. It means listening to the Force. And I'd stopped listening.
Dez shook his head.
I know what I have to do.
I understand, Wreath said. I've been thinking about that too.
His resistance to the Frontier assignment, that had been all about what he wanted, not about service. Honoring Master Jorah with a fire and vigil meant nothing if he didn't honor everything she'd taught him. By taking the assignment on Starlight, she'd been trying to teach him what service really meant.
I'm learning, Master, he thought.
Dez seemed to recognize the impact his words had had on Wreath.
What will you do next?
I think...
Wreath paused, then nodded.
I think I just figured that out.
By midday at the spaceport, Republic officials were busily cataloging every Bind Guild ship and interviewing every Bind Guild pilot. As far as Affy could tell, they'd started within minutes of her report to the authorities. She'd assumed it would take the Republic days or weeks to act, time that might have given Scover a chance to travel back to the frontier. She had more influence there, and the Republic less. She could have remained free. Instead, officials had arrested Scover right away. Affy had forced herself to watch the arrest footage from the hotel, which had made it available to her as Scover's guest. Scover had remained calm and quiet the entire time she was being cuffed and led away. That calm might shatter when she learned Affy was the one who had reported her, which was news Affy intended to deliver herself. This would be the toughest encounter of Affy's life, but it was one she could not turn away from. Scover had raised her, cared for her, even loved her. She deserved the chance to ask how her foster daughter could have done this to her, and Affy deserved the chance to explain why. She stood awkwardly in front of the vessel, watching the activity throughout the spaceport. The worst part wasn't the guilt or the uncertainty. It was knowing her entire future was being shaped by forces outside her control and having absolutely nothing she could do about it. Footsteps on the boarding ramp made her turn. Leox was strolling out alongside the Human Republic official checking the vessel. The official nodded her head as she checked off items on a data pad.
No irregularities here, so I can clear this ship for takeoff.
Most kind of you, Leox said. But at the moment, we have no place to go.
Take whatever work you want.
The Republic official obviously saw herself as their savior, or at least the bearer of very good tidings.
According to Republic law, upon the dissolution of an illegal shipping concern, all ships are considered the individual property of their senior officers, which means the vessel is now yours, Captain Jossie.
Leox shook his head.
Not so fast. If you're jotting all this down for the annals of the Republic, be sure you get it right. I'm not the senior officer assigned to the vessel. That'd be Affy Hollow, standing over there.
When he pointed at her, Affy managed to close her mouth so she wouldn't be goggling at them like a fool.
Me?
Official Guild representative trumps the captain every time.
With a shrug, Leox was handing over ownership of the thing he loved most in the world, the thing he could have claimed for his own in a heartbeat. Although Scover had showered a few fine things on Affy over the years, she had never received a more generous gift.
The Republic officials seemed willing to take Leox's word for it. To Affy, she said,
"Will you be changing the designation of the ship?"
"No,"
Affy said, a grin spreading across her face.
"This is the vessel, always and forever, and Leox Jossi remains her captain. He just works for me."
Leox was smiling, too, as he shook his head.
"What have I got myself into?"
As the Republic official went on her way, Affy hugged Leox with all her strength.
"I want it all to remain the same, just like it was before, except this time we're in it just for ourselves, on our own."
"Works for me, little bit. And I can call you that again because you've become my boss, which means the nickname has become ironic."
Was she going to fight him on that? Maybe later, Affy decided.
"All three of us. Wait, where's Geode?"
In the spaceship depot, Orla looked from the sample hollow she'd been given to the actual item. The new ship that would be hers. Almost pyramidal in structure, with three engines, a pointed prow, and an equally angular stern, the ship had a sharpness to it, like a dart or a shard of glass, like Orla herself. The vessel gleamed against the stark blackness of the depot, its pearlescent hull as beautiful as any jewel. The sales droid whirred up to her.
"If you wish to enter the ship..."
"Oh, yes. Yes, I do."
Orla stepped within her new ship almost with reverence. During the hyperspace disaster and the events on the Amaxine station, she'd wondered whether she was being selfish by declaring herself a wayseeker and setting out on her own. Now that it was all over, however, she found herself newly certain of her choice. The galaxy was bigger and stranger than any one being could ever know. There was a place for the Jedi Order to operate within it, and places for other Jedi to discover on their own. Serving the Order was important, but she could never give it the best of herself unless she knew herself, her instincts, and the Force more truly. She'd never felt more ready for the journey to begin.
"She's beautiful,"
Orla said, running her hand along the sleek pilot's chair.
"A work of art. Pass my compliments on to the designers."
The sales droid's lights blinked with pride.
"Does that mean you'll take it?"
"After a little haggling on the price,"
Orla shrugged.
"What can I say? I'm in love with it. But that's one hell of a markup."
The haggling didn't last too long. Orla's suggested price was fair, and the droid clearly had a sales quota to meet. Within the hour, Orla had put her thumbprint to every document and obtained all the passcodes for her new ship.
"The Lightseeker,"
she said.
"I'm calling her the Lightseeker."
"Duly registered,"
replied the sales droid.
"Shall I report that she travels with a crew complement of one?"
"Yes, unless I can convince my navigator friend to join me."
Geode stood nearby, his silence his only reply. He'd been willing to look over ships with her, but Orla already knew his loyalty was to Leox, Affy, and the vessel. Besides, this was a path she needed to walk alone.
"Maybe next time,"
she said, patting Geode on the side, already dreaming of the voyages to come. Once she was alone on the bridge of her ship, her ship, she sent a message to Comac. When his face appeared on the screen, Orla scooted over so he could see more of the Lightseeker than of her. "What do you think?"
"Beautiful."
Comac's smile didn't reach his eyes.
"I am truly happy for you, Orla. The Force has called you, and you have answered."
"I've been fighting my instincts my entire career,"
Orla admitted.
"Forcing myself to follow a path that wasn't mine. I want to serve the Order and the galaxy, but I can't do that if I'm living a lie."
She thought again of that long-ago day when they'd rescued one hostage but lost another, all because she'd put what was right and proper ahead of what the Force told her. Orla wouldn't make that mistake again. Comac nodded.
I envy you the surety of your convictions, Orla.
The anger he'd felt after Dez's supposed death, the echoes of the death of his master and of the hostage so long before, had taken a toll on Comac, a deeper one than Orla had realized. She said,
Are you all right? Do you need to do some way-seeking of your own?
No, I need the order now more than ever. But I need something else, too. A new direction, a focus. That only time can provide.
Orla wasn't positive that the order was what Comac required. But she couldn't give him those answers. That would be up to the Force.
May the Force be with you, old friend.
She raised one hand as he did, a mutual salute of farewell. Reith entered the Jedi Temple's meditation center with some trepidation. It was impolite to disturb others' trances. However, by chance, Master Comac was in the room alone, sitting in midair. That couldn't be easy. No doubt this was a profoundly deep meditation. Reith wondered whether he should tiptoe out again and was on the verge of doing so before Master Comac said, without opening his eyes,
What is it, Reith?
I was hoping to speak with you,
he said, which was obvious, but at least Master Comac didn't point that out. Instead, he descended to the ground and walked with Reith to a gathering area just outside, one where a carved fountain bubbled.
How can I help you, Reith? I assume it is urgent.
I didn't want to interrupt you, Reith said, but I saw that you had put in to leave on one of the next transports to the frontier, to take up your original assignment. Since I didn't know when that would be exactly, I figured the smart thing to do was find you right away.
Master Comac cocked his head.
Yet you still have not told me why.
He wasn't sure how to phrase what came next. I wanted to ask, just ask, no pressure, no hurt feelings if you say no.
Ask me.
It came out in a rush.
Would you consider taking me on as your apprentice?
Master Comac stared, as though he had never dreamed of such a thing. Probably he hadn't. But it wasn't such a strange request, was it? Maybe Reith hadn't made himself clear enough.
During our adventures on the Amaxine Station, I came to have a great respect for you. In many ways, you're not a typical Jedi, but I think maybe I need to expand my idea of what a Jedi can be, of the kind of Jedi I can be. Training with you would teach me so much, and I want to learn. If you're willing to take me, that is.
After a moment's hesitation, he dared to add,
Returning to the frontier is what Master Jorah would have wanted for me. We're both heading out there. I thought we might go together.
Master Comac still looked nonplussed. Reith decided to offer a tactful out.
If this isn't the right time, I understand.
It is an interesting time,
Master Comac said. He began to pace slowly along the courtyard, and Reith fell into step beside him.
I have heard Jorah Mali described as the kindest and wisest of teachers,
he said.
It's difficult to imagine picking up where she left off. But what she had to give you and what I have to give you are two very different things.
Reith brightened. This sounded promising.
Yes, exactly. I mean, yes, sir.
You've shown initiative in coming to me and in wanting your training to proceed along a new path. Now I must show courage and be open with you.
Master Comac stopped in place and met Reith's eyes.
I have had doubts these past weeks about whether the ways prescribed by the Jedi Council are invariably the best course to follow.
Had he heard that right? He couldn't have. Sir?
Master Comac sighed.
The darkness is as much a part of the Force as the light. The Order thinks it can bisect the Force so neatly, as though the primal living energy of all existence were a thing to be sliced and served.
Reith took a moment to consider this.
Doesn't that separation keep us safe?
Does it? Master Komak said. Or does the divide only make the darkness darker, more dangerous than it ever would have been in a state of nature?
I don't know,
Reith admitted. He hadn't thought abstract philosophy would be a major part of training, but it seemed it would be with Master Komak. At least it would be if he took Reith on.
I only know that our work is good work, that we save lives, end conflict, and bring peace.
Master Komak smiled at him.
You are sure of your path, Reith Silas. Never let anything shake you from it.
I only thought I was sure before, Reith confessed. But before I left for the frontier, Master Jorah asked me a question. She said when I knew the answer, I'd know why we needed to leave Coruscant. She asked why no Jedi can cross the Kyber Arch alone. Now I understand. No one crosses it alone, because the Arch itself wouldn't exist without all the Jedi Knights that have gone before, both the ones who fell in battle and the ones who built the Arch for others to remember.
I was giving the Order only as much of me as I wanted to give. It was all about me, not about us. From now on, I'm putting us first.
Jorah Mali was a wise woman, said Master Komak. I doubt I could match the profundity of her teachings.
That sounded suspiciously like goodbye.
So,
Reith began,
are we...
I still have much to learn, Master Komak said.
That sounded even more like a no, until he added,
and there is no better way to learn than to teach. You will be my first Padawan, Reith, and perhaps my greatest instructor in the Force.
Weeks later, Starlight Beacon officially went online. Its beams shone out through the galaxy, bright as any supernova, in a wordless message of the Republic's promise of guidance, protection, and prosperity. As the beams were illuminated, applause rang out aboard the station from the many parties present. The senior Jedi, Avar Kriss, Elzar Mann, and Stellan Geos. Other Jedi, such as Skeer and Buryaga. Republic officials, various diplomats, and delegations from nearby worlds. And one Padawan who'd made the last choice he would ever have expected just a few short weeks before. Reith Silas clapped along with the rest. For a moment, he wished Master Jorah were there to celebrate with them, to stand in a position of honor up on the dais. She had wanted this for Reith. This place on the frontier where anything and everything could happen, but nothing could be taken for granted. At long last, he recognized the value of what she had wished to give him, and he had resolved not to refuse his late master's final gift. No, he didn't care for adventures. They were dangerous, messy, and best avoided. The Amaxine station had proved that beyond any doubt. Reith still preferred for adventures to remain in stories where they belonged. But someone had to live the stories before they could be told. Someone had to tell the tales. Maybe Reith was meant to be one of the tellers. All he knew was that he was ready to serve the means of the Force, whatever or wherever they might be. There had been various speeches and performances throughout the ceremony, and those would continue for some time to come. The next, however, seemed to draw special attention. An older woman with vivid silver streaks in her black hair was ascending the dais to cheers and applause. Her sumptuous cloak and glittering coronet testified to her royal status even before it was announced.
To address the crowd, Queen Thandeka of Irem.
The queen lifted her chin, and the entire crowd fell silent. She was the wife of the ruler of a nearby planet, as Reith understood it, but something about her presence gave her a greater authority.
We welcome the Republic,
she said,
her voice ringing out over the crowd. 25 years ago, we had sealed ourselves off from the rest of the galaxy. We didn't trust the Republic or the Jedi, or even each other. All that changed when the Jedi came to rescue me, and the late Monarch Castle of Erino gave his life for mine.
She bowed her head slightly when she said Castle's name.
After that, our worlds began to listen to each other more. We dared to learn more about the galaxy beyond our narrow confines. We learned that independence is an illusion, that no one truly stands alone. We regained the courage to trust, without which we could never have moved forward. To trust is to hope. To believe in a better future, and believe that others will work with us to make it possible.
Many people clapped. Reith joined them.
It is in memory of Monarch Castle, and of the Jedi Master who died on our rescue mission, that the decision was made to place Starlight Beacon so close to the planetoid where the crisis took place.
Queen Thandeka continued.
We celebrate their memory here, today and forever.
More applause, and the queen descended from the dais as a choir assembled to perform. Reith, never a music lover, was relieved when his new master began steering them away from the center of the ceremony.
What comes next?
Reith asked. Master Komak, beside him, continued applauding.
I believe what follows is the grand feast.
Good. I'm starving.
That made Master Komak laugh, which Reith considered a good sign. After the musical performance, as they began walking with the crowds toward the banquet, Reith said,
What happens after this, Master?
Anything could happen, said Master Komak. And that is the joy of it.
Half a galaxy away, Nan knelt before the leader of the Nihil, the leader, the Eye, Marcion Roe, a figure so high above her she'd never have presumed to dream of any meeting. She would have prostrated herself before him. Never had she felt so unworthy of her stripes, but her emotions were less important than communicating the facts.
My guardian, Hake, was killed by the Jedi's trick, she said, along with so many of the others. I only survived because I had returned to the lower tunnels to make sure they were clear of other Drengir.
Marcion Roe nodded. The light shimmered dully on his metallic gray skin.
You are not to blame, he said. Their deaths are the responsibility of the Jedi, and the Jedi will pay.
The anger in his voice restored Nan, gave fuel to the vengeful flame inside her, and yet she had to caution him.
I fear the Jedi are very powerful. They have abilities unlike anything we've ever encountered before.
Marcion Roe merely smiled.
You are wise to fear the Jedi and the Republic, but they should fear us in return, for the Nihil will be the destruction of the Jedi.